Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Hey, would you love the secrets to learning how to sell without sounding salesy? Of course, everybody hates the idea of being salesy, and everybody wants to have more income, impact, and influence. So this is an amazing episode. I got my friend and my sales coach and one of my coaching clients and my friend who helps me run my mastermind groups, this young man named Xander Fryer, to join me on a call today where we're going to dive deep into helping you become a trusted advisor in your selling. Hi, I'm Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio, and you're going to use the doctor frame. You're going to ask intelligent questions, and you're going to overcome and avoid the three ways that most people screw up a sales call so that you can, again, increase your income and impact and influence, all thanks to today's episode of Early to Rise Radio. And today's show is brought to you by one of Xander Fryer's favorite books, The Perfect Day Formula. That is my book that helps you get more done so that you can generate more leads and do more sales calls and use everything that we're going to teach you here today on this amazing show. So Xander Fryer has been on this show before. He is a young man, only 30 years old. He is a coach. He helps other coaches get more clients. He has taught me how to sell. I've actually hired him, spent $5,000 on a one-day consultation with him, and it was worth every penny. He's probably given me a 100-to-1 return on my investment already. So listen, you are going to get an incredible amount of knowledge on today's show. So let's jump into this episode, which was recorded at the Four Seasons Hotel in Denver during our Toys for Tots weekend. It was absolutely amazing, and I'm really grateful that Xander is here to share how to sell without being salesy. Xander, my man, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, this is you're one of the first two-time guests, so this is going to be really great. Now, last time we talked more about mindset, limiting self-beliefs, which really are part and parcel of sales training. But today we're actually going to dive deeper into sales and what you're really an expert at these days, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Awesome. So before we get into your history of doing selling, why don't you tell us what is wrong with sales training today?
Oh man, a lot.
Well, specifically.
Well, I think you know, one of the biggest things that I've noticed that's the problem with sales training today is a lot of it is focused on the systems, the frameworks. There's a lot of good systems and frameworks that are out there, but you know where sales training has come from? It's come from a place of, you know, years and decades of manipulation and pushing and convincing. And, you know, the problem with that is I think, you know, over the last years and decades, you know, people are starting to get to a point where they're realizing this, they're recognizing it, and they don't want that anymore. They want real, they want authentic, they don't want, you know, nobody wants to be sold, but they do want to buy. And I think a lot of the sales training in the past is about selling people something rather than helping people understand that you might have something that they really want to buy. So it's approaching it from a different direction.
So would it be more about helping the other person, more about, hey, and thinking, well, what can I get a solution for them rather than, hey, I've got this thing, I'm going to get people to take it?
100%.
Okay. And do you think that it's partially the generation, you know, like the millennial, that type of awakening?
I think that's a huge part of it. Mm-hmm. But you know, one of the things that I keep telling everybody is millennial isn't really an age group. Millennial is a mindset, and I think you just kind of hit it on the head. It's awakened. It's more aware, right? And as you become more aware, you kind of stop just taking things, you know, for surface level and as they are, and you really do want to understand things on a deeper, from a deeper place.
So where did you get your sales training or sales ideas from, and who did you cobble them all together from?
Yeah, so it's come from a lot of different places, but you know, the basis of my sales training actually came from two places. Number one, it came from leadership training in the Air Force. So in Air Force ROTC, you learn a lot about leadership, and you know, when it comes to helping a team or a group accomplish a mission, right? If you think about it, you really are selling an idea to a team. Except when you're working with the military and A-type personalities, you can never sell someone something. You can't convince a bunch of A-type personalities to do something. You have to get everybody on board to accomplishing a team mission, a like goal for that to happen. So it actually started when I was in the Air Force in leadership training, and most people don't realize that sales really is about leading people to take action in their best interest, where maybe in the past they haven't. So that was actually the first, you know, the first opening to actual sales training, even though it wasn't directly sales. Second, it was actually working for Cisco Systems. And it's pretty funny because when I was at Cisco, I actually wasn't a salesperson. I was an engineer. And what I did as an engineer, I was a solutions architect. And what I did as an engineer was I was responsible for going into a customer. Normally you were paired with a salesperson. I was responsible for going into a customer and finding out what their deep problems were so that I could help design a solution for it, right? And what I noticed through my years working at Cisco was the customers, a lot of the time, didn't want to have a lot of the interactions with the quote-unquote salespeople. They just wanted to work with the engineers, the people that were really coming from a place of really trying to help them, no matter what, right? Because as an engineer, you know, we had a little tie to the sales goal, but it was our best interest to keep the customer happy and succeeding and moving forward. And, you know, that frame of mind, it's what, you know, Cisco taught me was called the trusted advisor. It meant, you know, sometimes it would mean, sometimes it would mean not getting the sale because it was your responsibility. You know, when I worked with like Disney, I had to think like I was a Disney employee. Not like I worked for Cisco, like I was a Disney employee. And it was my responsibility to figure out the best solutions for them, regardless if Cisco may miss out on it or might not get as big of a sale. It was my responsibility to get whatever was best for them. So that was probably one of the biggest, you know, biggest learning spots for me was at Cisco.
So most of the people that struggle with sales, you know, their first thing to say is, I don't want to be salesy. Or people that don't even... that have a business and they're like, man, I want to have a business. I want to help people, but I don't want to be a salesperson. I don't want to be seen as salesy. That's the biggest hurdle they have to get over mentally. So how does your approach help somebody get over the fact that when they think about, oh man, I have to go and actually sell something, I have to be this salesy person?
Yeah. So obviously we see this all the time. I think, sales in itself gets a really bad name, especially because of some of the things that in the past trainings have been very pushy, sleazy. You know, I always think of like the greasy, grimy used car salesman and all the training that went into, you know, that person. But I think that really gives sales a bad rap. And, you know, one thing I always have to tell people is first and foremost, sales is not bad, right? Sales is a tool.
To help people.
Sales can be used for bad if you're using it for bad, if you're selling snake oil. Mm-hmm. But if you have a good product, if you have a good service, if you're in the business of helping people, you actually have a responsibility to sell more of it. It's your responsibility to actually help more people understand the value that you're bringing so that they buy it so you can actually get this to the world. You know, one of the things I always tell people is like, do you know who Martin Luther King is?
Right.
Yeah. Well, Martin Luther King was a salesperson. He was a salesperson of an idea. And if at any point he had, and you know what he did, if at any point he had felt, you know, like, oh, I'm pushing this too hard, right? How do you think we, like, as a society, would be off now if he was like, oh, I'm being a bit salesy? Of course, when he went out there and he said everything he did, and he pushed urgency, and in his "I Have a Dream" speech, it was urgency. You know, it was really like, we need to notice this now. We need to fix this now. We cannot keep waiting, right? He was pushing urgency and influencing others. And if he didn't have, you know, frankly, the cojones to do that, where would we be now?
Right.
So the first thing that I tell everybody when it comes to sales, you have to understand sales is a tool. It can be used for bad or it can be used for good. And if you're a good person and you're bringing good to this world, you have a moral responsibility to bring more of it to this world. And sales is that tool. So, you know, that's number one. And then number two, a big, big part of it is, a couple pieces when we teach people sales. We teach them how to approach it like, you know, basically like I was talking about, from a trusted advisor standpoint rather than a salesperson. You know, when I was in Cisco, one of the stories, and you've heard me tell this story before, Craig, but I remember when I was a 27-year-old kid And my sales guy got kicked out of the Disney account. So like three other
sales. You never told me that part.
Yeah. So they had.
And why did he get kicked out? For being too salesy?
Because he was pushy and salesy.
Yeah.
And so he got kicked off the Disney account. So I was the only person left on the West Coast to handle Disney, which was at that point a $50 million account by itself. And I already had other clients. And so I got called in to go have a meeting with the CIO of Disney as the engineer. And I walk into the room and the CIO of Disney, I still remember, Susan O'Day, just, I know I'm not supposed to curse, but real hard ass. And so I walk into the room and she just goes, great, Cisco's here. What are you going to sell me today? And I said, oh. And she was like, what? I said, I don't know. She's like, what do you mean? I said, look, I'm just here to learn. I want to understand your business and see if there's anything I can help out with. And she said, okay, go ahead and take a seat. And she sent my director an email, after having kicked three account managers out of that account over the last 6 months, she sent my director an email that said, I think we'll keep this one around. It was because I wasn't trying to be a salesperson. I just wanted to understand her business. I wanted to understand her problems and see if there was any way that I could help. If there was a way that I could help, I wasn't going to run away and not tell her. I was going to tell her, but I wasn't going to push anything on her. And that was one of the key things when I realized, sales is not about, you can never sell anybody anything, but you can help them see a problem that they have and realize you might be able to help them solve it.
Right. And then, so from there, how do we then distill that knowledge down to the person who's the life insurance salesperson, the financial advisor, the health and wellness coaches that you tend to help, people like myself, people that are selling books, selling, cars, houses, real estate agents. How do we then take, this trusted advisor role and improve our ability to persuade people to take action?
Yeah. And this is probably one of the most powerful skills when I work with, our clients to help them become better salespeople. One of the best things that you can learn is asking intelligent questions. When you can learn to ask intelligent questions of your potential client, they're going to come to the answers themselves. So, the whole idea is if I were to tell you something, Craig, you could reject it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an idea that you could reject because I told it to you and it'd be opinion from me, right? But if I asked you a question that allowed you to come to the same solution, it would be truth because you told it to yourself. So, a lot of it is just being able to ask intelligent questions. When we have sales conversations with people and when we teach our clients, the sales conversations are 80% the other person talking. A lot of people think, when you're a salesperson, you have to pitch, you have to convince, right? But if you're doing this properly, the other person's actually talking 80% of the time. You're only offering a solution and offering that prescription. We call it prescription. We talk about something called the doctor frame. But that prescription is only 20% of the actual conversation. A majority of this is asking intelligent questions to get them to come to the space where they realize, crap, I've got a problem that I really need to solve. And it sounds like Xander might have the answer.
Yeah, it's really, they talk themselves into the sale, don't they?
They walk themselves into the sales. And it makes the conversations a lot easier when you only have to talk 20% of the time and you're just asking a question.
Right. So being an unintelligent person, give me some intelligent questions here, man. What are some intelligent questions I can ask that anybody can ask? So, not specific to coaching or anything, but whether it is someone going in with a financial product or, an actual household good, how do we ask the right questions?
Yeah. So the framework that we kind of run through, the first question you always ask is just the big broad, basically what's not working for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So as a coach, what's not working for you, for you in your business or in the health and wellness space, what's not working for you in your health and wellness right now? An expert, in like the real estate space, if somebody's, somebody's looking for a certain type of house, you want to ask, what are you looking for? But also what's not working for you right now and the other things that you've seen so that you can really understand where they're coming from and the problems they have. One of the things we always tell everybody is, people don't buy their way into something. They buy their way out of a problem.
Okay.
So you do need to understand a problem. You need to help them understand the problem. So the first question is always kind of the big, broad, let's better understand this problem from a big perspective, if that makes sense, regardless of whatever industry you're in.
Now, are we just going to like, hey, we're going to meet somebody in the first 10 seconds. We say, hey, what's wrong with your life, man? Is that what we're going to say? Well, I kind of skipped over. I'm sure there's some rapport building.
There's absolutely rapport building, right? So you have to have rapport. And another thing that we teach all of our clients, right, is like, if you don't have rapport, it doesn't matter what questions you ask because they're not going to answer them truthfully.
Got it.
Right? You'll get, if you don't have rapport, if you don't have a real connection with someone, there's, you know, you'll ask a question and they'll either give you, you know, a short answer, or they'll tell you exactly what you want to hear, or they'll be combative with you.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, when I take it back to Cisco, right, it's like some of those sales cycles, you know, when you're selling $25 million networking systems, some of those sales cycles, literally, you know, you might have an entire meeting that's just building rapport. You might have 2 weeks that are just building rapport with that client before you actually get to, you know, starting to figure out their problems, sitting down with them at the table, running through everything that's not working with them. Right? So you have to have that rapport first before anything else. If you don't have the rapport, how are they going to trust you? How can you become a trusted advisor if you don't have any rapport?
How do you build that fast when you don't have,
Sure. So it's interesting because you can actually build rapport very quickly by asking intelligent questions. So, you know, when someone, there's the infamous, the person that I enrolled at a coffee shop, like wall in line at a coffee shop, bought a VIP session from me, for thousands of dollars, you know, 45 minutes.
Walk us through that, okay, because most people don't know that
story.
So
we could probably just walk through this one and it'd be a really good explanation of it. So
sure.
I was in line at a coffee shop at Tom's in Venice, and I was talking to one of the people on my team, and I mentioned what we do. You know,
you were on the phone with somebody?
I was on the phone with somebody. And I mentioned, you know, our offer statement, helping coaches and experts build sustainable, profitable businesses. And so after I got off the phone, she actually tapped me on the shoulder and she was like, hey, so I heard you help coaches build profitable businesses. I heard you talking about six figures, even seven figures. And so she was like, how do you do that? Right? So she actually asked me a question first. So there was already some rapport built because she could tell that I was an expert in this space.
Got it.
So there's a little rapport built there. But what I did next really helped build more rapport. So when she asked, how do you do that? Right? Most experts or coaches or whatever, they would say, oh, I do this, I do that, I do. They love explaining how they do stuff, right? So they want to explain the entire system, right? But as a trusted advisor, I don't care if she thinks I'm super intelligent. I just explain all my, you know, my situation or all my systems, right? I want to understand what her problem is. So when she asked me, how do you do that? I actually said, we can absolutely run through all that, but I'm just curious, are you a coach? She's like, yeah, I am. I'm trying to get my business up and running. And I said, oh, where's it at right now? And so I just turned it around. And as you start to ask curious questions, right? One of the things that I always tell people is to be the most interesting person in the room, be the most interested, right? You ask the questions, you become the doctor in the room. And when you ask the questions, it builds rapport with them because they get to talk about themselves. So by asking her, you know, where's the business at right now? You know, what are you doing? What do you focus on? Who are you trying to help? Some of those questions in the beginning, she started to feel really comfortable. And that's when I could say, so just curious, you know, with where you're at, what's not working for you in the business? Well, I've been trying to do this for the last 6 months. We were trying to get this up and running. You know, I had some good possibilities, but then I lost a ton of different clients here and there. And from there, we can really start to dig into her problems and figure out what wasn't working and eventually help her realize that I had a solution that could help her solve it. So she heard me in line at Tom's. We got our coffees. After a couple questions, like while standing there, I asked her if she wanted to go sit down and talk more over coffee. So we went and we sat down over coffee, and 40 minutes later, she actually ended up enrolling in a VIP day with me.
And then so, it seems to me like we spend a lot of time in this, what's not working.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. 100%.
And then is that kind of like a critical key element to the sale?
It's probably the most important element to the sale. So the thing that I always tell people mess up the most when it comes, well, there's three things. Number one is rapport.
Okay.
So if you don't have rapport, and there's different ways to build rapport. Obviously, if you have a best-selling book, if you do have a big audience, then you're going to have rapport with your audience.
Yeah, positioning.
Because they know you. You know, love and trust you factor.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that rapport with someone, you have to build it on the fly a lot of the time. And a lot of the time it comes through just showing you're concerned, showing that you really care about this person, asking intelligent questions and connecting,
mm-hmm.
right? But really caring, you really, and it, there's a deeper sense of like, you actually have to care about this person. You really have to care about who they are, what they're trying to do, the problems they have on a deeper level. If you don't, you can feel it, right? Everybody can feel the difference between someone who really cares and someone who's just trying to sell you something, right? Like you can smell commission breath over the phone.
Such a great line, isn't it?
Yeah, over the phone, you can smell it, you know, miles away, right? So number one is rapport.
Yeah.
But number two, rapport, for a lot of people, rapport is actually pretty easy to start to build rapport regularly. Number two is helping people understand they have a real problem. Because most people who have a real problem have spent a long time numbing that problem out. So, you know, the example we always give is, it's really easy to give examples in the health and wellness space, because say someone's been 40, 50 pounds overweight for the last decade, right? How do you think the only way they survive with that is? It's by numbing it out, by numbing out the issue.
Coping strategies of all kinds.
So it's denying the fact that it's really messing with their life. It's messing with their intimate relationship with their husband or their wife. It's messing with their time with their kids. It's messing with their confidence. It's messing with their self-worth. It's messing with everything. Mm-hmm. But the only way that they can survive is by numbing that out. So a majority of a conversation really truly is, and the hardest part of a conversation really truly is, helping someone really get to the truth of their real problem. And it isn't until they fully, you know, you understand the problem and they fully feel they have a problem and need to solve it now.
Got it.
Right.
Okay. So it was rapport. It was not getting deep enough into the problem. And then number three,
this kind of goes back to what I was just talking about with most experts, right? Is when you actually have this conversation, and again, this kind of goes back to most experts want to pitch. They want to talk about, here's my product. Here's how it works. Here's why it's so great. You know, all the ins and outs and all the intricacies. And most experts over explain what it is that they actually do, thinking that that's going to be what convinces their clients to want to move forward with them, right? And I would see this in Cisco all the time, especially with engineers, other engineers, right? So other engineers would go to, you know, the executive teams of, you know, the different clients and be like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do all this. And here's how we're going to connect this and this and that. And the business people were just like, what is going on? Like, I just don't care. Like, can you just solve this business issue with your crazy tech?
Right.
And if all you would say was, yes, we can solve that, they'd be like, cool, let's go.
But you got to explain all your flux capacitors.
All the induction, all the flux capacitors, everything.
Where you get the plutonium,
yeah,
all this
right?
stuff.
So, you know, what we see is with experts, they want to over-explain and it ends up being over-pitchy, right? If you're talking, they're not feeling anymore. Whoever's talking is feeling. While they're talking, they're feeling.
Okay.
While you're talking, they're starting to lose you.
Huh.
And most people don't realize that. So whenever it gets to like a quote unquote pitch, right? That pitch should not be more than 5 minutes. And most people think it should be 20 minutes, or the pitch itself should be 30 minutes, or, you know, 70 or 60% of the conversation. It's a small, small portion of the conversation.
Right, because they're talking themselves into the sale.
Yep.
And if you're talking too much, you talk yourself out of the sale.
Yep, you talk them out of buying it. People buy on emotion. They justify with logic, but they do buy on emotion. And mm-hmm. if you talk too long, they lose that emotion.
Okay, so when you're doing the what's not working, mm-hmm. You know, because I've followed a lot of your stuff, and so you eventually seem like you get to some really uncomfortable questions.
Oh, yeah.
So is that part of the magic? Is like you have to be okay with answering or asking uncomfortable questions,
absolutely.
And then talk about why you do this on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, really when it comes down to, so we can take it back to the health and fitness space, right? You know, this is not a question of wanting to lose the 40 pounds. Right? This extra 40 pounds is costing, you know, this man or woman everything, right? So if we'll just give this person a name, Tina, who's 40 pounds overweight, right? And has been for 10 years, right? It's not about losing the 40 pounds, right? If it was, that would be a very surface level issue. But those 40 pounds are costing her life.
Mm-hmm.
She's lost her confidence. She's lost her self-worth. Her relationship with her husband is on the rocks. And I say this because I have my clients right now that are in the health and wellness space, and they come to me and they literally say that their clients that they started working with and losing the weight, it saved their marriage. They were going through divorce and they backtracked, right? So these are the things that they really need to start to understand what this is costing them. Because most of the time they numb that out. They numb out the fact that they're missing out on opportunities with their kids. They numb out, you know, the fact that they are facing serious health issues and might not be around for another 10 years if they don't fix this now, right? If you're not willing to have those conversations about the really difficult stuff because you're worried about getting uncomfortable and asking those uncomfortable questions, you're focused on yourself. The truth is they need to be real about this. And until they get real, they will not make the decision to change, because making the decision to change is scary. So you need to help them sit in some discomfort before they make that decision to change. You know, I tell this to a lot of people. One of the best ways to think about it is like, you know, for a lot of our clients that do some form of transformational work, you have to help your clients hit an artificial rock bottom, because most people won't change until they hit some form of rock bottom. And they can do that in a safe space with you on the phone, or they can go do it 10 years down the line when they get diagnosed with some chronic illness, right? And so that's what I have to tell, you know, every one of my clients, is to remember that you're helping them hit an artificial rock bottom. And the reason you ask, you know, why we do this on the phone, you know, a lot of people, a lot of coaches especially, and experts love, they think, you know, just to build more rapport, I want to do this over video. So I can see that person, I can connect, or they want to do it in person. We actually tell everybody, when you're doing sales conversations, do them over the phone, not in person, not over video, because there's what we call the confession booth theory. So when you can't actually see someone, you can't look them in the eye, it makes you much more likely to fully open up and talk really about your problems. It's, you know, it's kind of like in a confession booth. You feel like you're talking to God and you can just let it all out. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's why we do it over the phone.
Okay. So you know, these people are like, you know, spilling it out and really into a place of emotion, but yep, you know, negative emotion. Now, we obviously don't want them to stay in that spot. So, sure. So where does this conversation go from here? Because like right now, they're just like, they just want to get off the phone and go cry or yeah, something. Well, and yeah, we don't want them to feel like that. Of course, it's really to get them to see, first of all, there is the problem, and then
and
what?
That, yeah, and that they need to change immediately, and then we move into where they want to get to.
How do we get them to see that the change needs to be immediate, just in terms of them saying all those things, and how do we get the sense of urgency in there?
So a lot of the time, it could be as simple as just asking them.
Because they've already tried so many things.
They're
skeptical.
Yeah, so that's a big question. So whenever we get someone that might be skeptical, or express beliefs of how, you know, this won't work for them, right? Again, we'll take it back to Tina, right? So Tina's talking about how, you know, I've tried everything. I think it might just be genetic. You know, I don't think I could ever fix this problem. You can actually ask Tina, you know, I'm just curious, how long have you had this belief that you can't fix it, right? So now you're helping Tina realize that belief, that skepticism, is actually the reason why she's stuck where she's stuck right now, right? And so that's one of the first things that you can do to help release a lot of that skepticism and actually kind of destroy any objections you might get further down that it won't work, because you helped her realize that this belief isn't true. This belief is actually what's kept her stuck. And then again, back to the questions. If you want to help evoke urgency, you just need to ask intelligent questions to help them realize they need to fix this now, right? So again, you can ask Tina, like, how much longer do you want to keep going down this path? Right? If you continue down this path for another 2 years, you know, where would you be? And so you want to ask the intelligent questions that help that person realize that by saying no today, it's saying yes to going down a path that they do not want to go down.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. So now, what do? We've shown them they're at point A, kind of they're trapped in a prison.
Yeah. So the big thing is you show them they're at point A, and then you want to show them point B, where they can be, where they want to be, but where they've held themselves back from getting to. And again, it's through intelligent questions to help frame where it is that they actually want to get to, their goals, their, you know, where they actually want to be once this works for them. So for Tina, you know, asking her what that goal weight, you know, when she's actually at that goal weight, what life would be like, right? How that would affect her relationship with her husband, how that would affect her self-confidence, how that would affect her with her kids. So she can now describe that point B. And what most people kind of forget is, truthfully, you know, the value of your product, service, or solution is the dissonance between where they're at, point A, and where they want to be, point B. So the greater the dissonance there is the true value of what it is that you're actually doing, right? And this is why when we do work with people, and even in the fat loss space, I can't remember who I was talking to a few months ago. They were like, fat loss is a commodity. You can never make more than, you know, $300 a month in the fat loss space. Yet we've worked with clients when they learn how to communicate this, you know, they're enrolling people at $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 in the fat loss space Because the truth is, if you can take someone who's been 40, 50 pounds overweight, is on the verge of divorce, can't be there for their kids, and you know is going down the path of chronic illness, and you can get them healthy, that's worth everything, right? And the people that commit, you know, this is actually one thing that I think you told me, it's, you know, people who pay attention. Mm-hmm. So when those clients commit at those levels, they see the best results that those coaches and trainers have ever seen out of any clients. So really, you want to focus on the dissonance between A, where they're at, and B, where they really want to be. And that dissonance is the actual value of what you bring to that client and what you should be charging.
And then I always say, like, hey, you're in point A, the prison, you want to get to point B, the promised land, and the gap in between is what I provide.
Yep.
And does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, it's the roadmap or the treasure map, or, you know, the way I like to explain it, when you're doing something transformationally, right? It's, you're the guide. You're the guide that's going to get them there. You're not just going to give them the map, right? Because that's what an info product could do, right? You could get that from a book, but the reason that the book isn't succeeding, right, is because there's something not there. You're not there to get yourself there. You need a guide. You need someone who's actually going to be able to help you commit, get you all the way from point A to point B.
How much time do you spend talking about their dreams?
After they've gone through like really opening up about the problem, the dream doesn't have to be long. So it could just be 2-3 minutes. It's not a long time, but it's just to get them to sit in that place just for a minute.
So it's not that important for them to get like super excited about like, oh, this is going to happen and this is going to happen.
And they will. So for a lot of people, it's a lot easier to talk about the dream.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't have to spend a ton of time getting to the truth there. A lot of people could tell you what that dream is very quickly. Right. But most people have been numbing out their problem for so long that it takes a little bit more digging. Right. So the digging into the problem really takes a little bit of time. It takes some very intelligent questions, some real curiosity, and just probing around, just like a doctor, right? You know, if you walk into a doctor's office, right, you're gonna walk in there and the doctor's gonna say, okay, what's not working for you? What's wrong? Right? And you're gonna go, oh, you know, speaking from experience, right? So some people will just come in. And one time I fell snowboarding, I went to the doctor's office. I was like, I have a sprained wrist. Can I get like a brace and some painkillers and I'll be on my way, right? Do you think the doctor just gave me, like that would be so.
Oh, you diagnosed yourself. Great.
So many experts just do that. Like somebody comes to them and they say, you know, hey, Craig, this is what I need. I need this, 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 and this, right? And if you just gave that person exactly that, it'd be like a doctor prescribing me some painkillers and a brace. And the doctor goes, hang on. So this is what the doctor should do. Hang on, right? And he goes, how'd you fall? How fast were you going? What'd you fall on? What's the angle you fell in? And you know, I fell really fast and I fell at a weird angle and I fell on a box. And he goes, huh, does this hurt? And he moved my wrist up and I was like, ow. And he goes, does this hurt? And he pulled it, I was like, ow. And he twisted it and I was like, ow. And he's like, it's broken. And so we had to go get an x-ray. But it took him like really digging into the specifics to really get clear on like, your wrist is broken. And now the next part, really, he asked me, he goes, you know, do you play any sports? Do you play an instrument or anything like that? And I was like, what does this have to do with anything? But he's a doctor. So I answered, I said, you know, I play baseball, you know, piano, guitar, drums, you know, all this stuff. And he goes, so here's the deal. We might have to give you surgery. You might have to get surgery on this. And I want you to understand why I asked that question. Because if you don't get surgery on this, and we go through this and it does turn out it is what I think it is, if you don't get surgery, it's very unlikely that you're ever going to play the piano again. It's very unlikely that you're ever going to play baseball again. It's very unlikely that you're ever going to play the drums again. So now I'm not making a decision whether or not I want to get surgery. I'm making a decision on whether or not I want to play baseball, play the piano, play the guitar, play the drums. I'm deciding whether or not I want to keep my identity as a human being. I'm going to say yes to surgery, right? So that's why it's so important to really dig in. I was about to just get painkillers and a brace and walk out of there. But because he was willing to ask the, number one, ask the specific questions to get clear what the real problem was. And then number two, help me realize that if I didn't go through with this, it was going to cost me everything that was important to me in my life. And so by then it was a no-brainer. Yeah, I'll do surgery, right?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of little elements in the way that you continue this sales conversation on, but we don't have time for all of it. But, you know, you did – you know, the doctor got you to take action. So how does any salesperson, you know, quote unquote, or coach or real estate agent, how do they get them? Okay, great. This was your pain. This is where you want to get to. here's my solution, you know, that 5 minute pitch, but you know, not talking too much, not talking them out of the sale. What's the thing to make this all come together?
What do you mean by that?
Well, what do we get? Like, okay, now they're excited. Now, where do we go from there?
You help them enroll.
Yeah. So how, what do we do? What do we do?
Got
what do we
it,
say?
Got
what do we say without, what do we say without saying too much? To make things happen.
So, you know, when it comes to the pitch, right, the pitch, and like we just talked about, if they're at point A and they want to get to point B, right, you have to paint them a very simple step-by-step, you know, 3 to 5 steps. I call it, you know, if this was like a 90-second Hollywood movie, would it have no plot holes and make perfect sense to the person that you're talking to? If you're at point A and you want to get to point B, here's how we're going to do it. In like 90 seconds to 2 minutes. And that plot makes perfect sense.
90 seconds to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the actual how you're going to get there, right? We always tell people, on top of that, you want to include some form of social proof, right? Because again, when it comes back to, you know, especially if this is the first time somebody's ever met you, right? The first question is, can I trust this person, right? And if you can express that you have done this with somebody else like them, right? And you can tell them that story, they're going to understand, okay, you know, it's not just, you know, Xander hasn't just done this with this person. He's done it, you know, random people. He's done it with someone just like me in this exact situation. So I can be very confident that it's going to work for me as well. So when it comes to the actual pitch, that process, you're bringing your social proof in and you're talking about the how in a very, very short way. That is your kind of your methodology, taking them from point A to point B, but not over explaining it. Right. And again, the way that we always explain this, it's like if you had a gunshot wound to the gut, right, and an ambulance showed up and the ambulance driver's like, all right, we got, you know, V8 twin turbo, we've got, you know, pinstripes, we've got brand new Bilstein shocks, leather interior, we're gonna take you down Adam Street, then down Washington, then we're gonna get on 95 North, and then we're gonna get on 90, you know, the I-10 South. You're just like, oh my God, like I've been shot. Like, why are you telling me all this stuff? Right? Or you become the expert and you're like, well, I don't like Adams. Like, can we not take Adams? Like, so this happens for a lot of people when they give their pitch, they start to explain a bunch of stuff. And then the person's like, well, I don't think I need that. Right. Or I don't want this. And now you're talking yourself out of it. Whereas if that ambulance driver just showed up and was like, hey, Craig, you've been shot. It looks like it went clean in and clean out. We're going to get you patched up in the ambulance. We'll get you to the hospital as fast as possible to get you cleaned out, make sure that everything's good. And we'll have you out of there in the next 24 hours. Cool.
This is an amazing doctor who's getting me up with a gunshot wound.
Sure, right? But you get
this
you get,
is and this from the doctor who just wanted to give himself painkillers.
Just wanted to get painkillers and a brace, right? But again, you know, you want to keep it simple. You want to justify just enough so that they really understand that you can help them, but you don't want to over-explain, right? And then after that, you obviously give your pricing and help them move forward.
Yeah, and then they say, that's too expensive. I want to talk to my cat, you know, then what do we say?
Sure. So, you know, this is something that I struggled with for a long time. First, before we get into kind of that part, one of the things that I struggled with for a long time, because I think everybody, actually, let me ask you, Craig, like if you were given like a 50% off discount today, or like a, you have to act now or some form of urgency, right? How does that make most people feel?
It feels like there's stress on it.
Yeah, there's stress on it. It's a little bit uncomfortable. A lot of people feel a little bit salesy, so they don't want to do it. And one of the things that I tell everybody is urgency. Again, urgency is one of the only things that can really help people take intelligent, purposeful, intentional action in the face of fear. Right? So for your potential clients, most of the time, the reason that they're stuck with the problem that they currently have right now is because their decision-making process has not benefited them for months or even years or decades. If we go back to Tina, for a decade of not fixing this problem, her decision-making process has not helped her. And if left to her own devices, she's going to stay stuck in that part. Unless you can help provide a little bit of urgency to help her make a purposeful decision today. Right. And again, if we take it back to Martin Luther King in his I Have a Dream speech, it's littered with urgency. We have to take action now. We have to fix this now. We cannot keep waiting. He pushes the urgency because he's really helping people. Look, every time we say we'll fix this tomorrow, it never comes. And so truthfully, the first thing, you know, every time we're working with someone, most experts, coaches, especially people who've had some negative influence with sales in the past, they've been manipulated or tricked or something like that. They tell themselves, I don't ever want to do any form of urgency because it's too quote unquote salesy. But the truth is, if you're doing good in this world, I'm going to take it back to the fact that you have a moral obligation to help people move forward with you. And this person, Tina, her decision-making process, if left to her own devices, is to say, I'll fix it later. And you cannot let that happen because she's been doing that for 10 years. And so the first thing that everybody needs to understand is you do need to be the doctor that when, you know, when somebody comes into your office and they're smoking 3 packs a day and they have lung cancer, and you're like, you need to stop smoking 3 packs a day right now. And they say, I think about it. You need to tell them you're going to die if you're not. You need to be able to have that difficult conversation. Look, like, do you know what's going to happen if you continue to do this? Do you know what's going to happen for your kids if you continue to do this? You need to make the decision now, because without it, you're just going to keep going down this path. And it's not just you that suffers. It's your family. It's your friends. It's everybody else out there. And that doctor has a moral responsibility to make sure that this smoker fully understands the decision they're about to make. And that they really need to make a decision to stop smoking today.
So now we've, you know, we've overcome that objection. Sure. About thinking about it. And what about price?
Yeah. So price is this is an interesting one. And I think you've heard me say this before, but in my opinion, because I think I might just be the wrong person to ask this question. In my opinion, not having the money is a belief. And most people, like, there's a lot of people out there that when they hear this, they're like, what? Like, that can't be true. But if that's not true, how come I've had people with literally send me screenshots of their bank account that say $47, find the money to work with us? Yet I'll work with somebody who's in a corporate job, they're making 6 figures, and they've got $20,000 in their savings account, and they will tell us over and over and over again that they can't afford it, right? The truth is, for some people, that belief that they can't afford it is much, much stronger than others because of their past programming. But the truth is, it is a belief. And it's your responsibility if this person has a problem that you can help solve, it's your responsibility to help them realize that they can't afford it. And a lot of that comes back to, if they don't feel that they have a problem in the beginning, a real problem that they need to fix now, they're probably going to think that whatever price it is too expensive. But if they understand they have a real problem, like the question I always ask, right? It's like, Craig, if all of a sudden Canada introduced the left eye tax, right? And say you were broke, right? And Canada introduced the left eye tax for $10,000. If you didn't pay $10,000, you had to give up your left eye. You would find $10,000, right? You would figure it out. But for most people, they don't realize that, like, what you're going to be doing with someone is, you know, truthfully, you are going to be saving their life. You're going to be saving their business. You're going to be saving, you know, their health. Whatever it is that you're doing with people is worth that. And it is like someone, you know, basically taking their left eye.
Are you calling everybody in Canada a lefty?
No.
Okay, good. Not. Good, good.
I love my Canadian friends.
Good. So how do you say this without being combative?
Sure.
Because I think,
absolutely,
you know, you're excited about it now. And I know you're not this way in your sales calls.
Yeah.
And you don't teach people to be, but there's... If you know, like, man, this person needs it and they're giving me this bull crap excuse that they yeah. can't afford it and I know they can, how does somebody make sure they communicate everything properly?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things when it comes to, like, objection handling, mm-hmm. right? If somebody gives you an objection, the first thing that you want to realize is there's going to instantly be a break in rapport. Every objection you get, There's a nick. I'm not going to say there's a break. There's a nick in rapport.
Got it.
And you need to rebuild that rapport first. So if somebody says, you know, somebody really wants to do this, but they're like, man, I can't afford this, right? Because they truly believe they can't afford this right now. Man, I can't afford this. What, you know, they break down, they shield up a little bit. And it's your responsibility to slow it down, rebuild the relationship with them, and help them continue to believe that they can move forward. It's coaching, mm-hmm. right? Objection handling really just is the first coaching session that you're ever going to have with a client. If you're a coach, you're going to be coaching them from this fear and this belief to actually taking an intelligent action. So a lot of the time, you know, the first thing that we want to do is we just want to, you know, get back that rapport. Like, look, I totally appreciate how you feel. a lot of our best clients have felt the same way. They, you know, they have been in hard financial situations, and so they believed that they couldn't afford this. But what we found was it's the people that are actually in the financial situations like you that are the ones that need this the most. And that's why we're having this conversation, because you remind me of one of our clients, Amanda. Amanda was in the same situation just like you. And what we did is we actually talked through it. We figured out how she could get moving today, because she knew that if she stayed on the path that she was going down a very dangerous route.
Yeah. And you use a lot of referrals or references to other
references, a lot of case studies.
In both the success, like when you're talking about, oh, yeah, you know, I'm 100, you know, I can help you because I've helped, you know, Bob do this. But also now you're also referencing other clients, just
absolutely,
by first name, of course, and not by details, about how somebody else has done.
Right, because you want to rebuild that connection and help. Like, they feel alone right now.
Right.
They feel alone when they think that they can't do this, and you want to help them realize they're not alone.
Yeah.
There's been other people right where they're at.
Yeah.
And you can help them through that. And, you know, when you walk them through that, and you show them Amanda, you know, she was able to, you know, a few weeks later, she was able to finally lose the weight. Right. Few, you know, 8 weeks in, she lost her first 15 pounds and she lost another 15 in the next 8 weeks. And she's never been more alive. She's never had a better relationship with her husband. She's never been there for more of her kids' stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you're like, could you imagine if Amanda wasn't able to get resourceful and make the decision to move this forward?
Yeah.
Right. And you can ask them, you know, if we were able to help you do that, is that something you'd be ready to do? And then, you know, now they can really see, like, they're starting to think, where can I get this money?
Cool.
Instead of just, I can't do this, it's where can I get this money? How can I start to move forward?
Oh, that's fantastic, man. Listen, I know we could go on for hours and hours and hours, especially just on objections alone. But we'll wrap this up now.
Sure.
Is there any one last piece of advice you'd love to share with people just about sales in general persuasion?
This was an idea that I read it in a book completely randomly. It's outside of sales, but around business.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an idea that, you know, whatever you're doing in business, especially if you're bringing value to people, that it's not about you. It's not about you. It never was, and it never will be. And the sooner that everybody starts to realize that your business is not about you, you start to get yourself out of the way. Majority of business owners just hold themselves back because they're worried about them. They're worried about the way that they sound. They're worried about people judging them. They're worried about, you know, all of that stuff. When the truth is, if you just realize that there are people out there right now crying themselves to sleep looking for you, while you're telling yourself you're not good enough to help that person, while you're telling yourself you don't want to be salesy, so you're not, you know, putting urgency around your offer, while you tell yourself that you can't have these conversations, you're not a good copywriter or marketer, they're out there suffering. It's your responsibility to get good enough,
mm-hmm,
so that you can go help them. And that was an idea and a belief that I've been cultivating for the last 2 years every day, that it's not about me. It never was, and it never will be. And anytime that I feel anxious or nervous or afraid, I remember that. And as soon as I remember that, I realize that there's other people out there that are worse off and I need to go help them.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And so, you know, you've helped me. I hired Xander for sales training. It was a real game changer for me. And so anytime you read articles from Xander on Early to Rise, or anytime that you, you know, get the opportunity to learn more from him, please do it. It'll help you become better at sales in every aspect of your life, not just business, but also your personal life, and also just simply help you grow your income, your impact, and your influence. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me, man.
Awesome. That show right there, how to overcome objections, how to do that step-by-step sales process that gets people to talk themselves into a sale, is going to make you so much money. This here is worth more than $5,000, what I paid him, and you're getting it for free. So if this was helpful to you, please go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and send me some feedback on it at support@earlytorise.com. I've had so many people who are veterans in the sales world say to me, Xander's information is a game changer, all right? So I'd love to hear that. support@earlytorise.com, or send me a message on Instagram @realcraigvalentine and share this one with all of your friends, because it'll really, really help. Now, here's the thing. I mentioned before that Xander is also a client of mine. He's come to two of my Perfect Life workshops, and now he's a certified Perfect Life workshop coach. So if you want to work with him or you want to work with me at one of my workshops, I actually helped him find the love of his life as well, in addition to helping him grow his business. So if you want to be like Xander, if you want to learn how to sell better, if you want to learn how to do everything better so that you grow your income, impact, and influence, send me an email at craig@godfather.com or visit perfectlifeworkshop.com today to fill out your application, or send me a direct message on Instagram at @realcraigvalentine. Looking forward to helping you have an amazing year, get amazing results in every area of your life, and we'll see you very soon.